fired up for this Monday show. This is a really good Monday show. Second hour, we got Bishop Robert Barron on. He's got a brand new book, Renewing Our Hope, Essays for the New Evangelization. It's a very good book. He's always a great guest. So get your questions ready for Bishop Barron. We'll be taking questions on the new evangelization, essentially. If you have questions about what we're doing at this moment in a church, as a church, and how we can be better evangelizing the world to Christ, that would be those questions will be perfect for the second hour with Bishop Barron, and he's in many ways the perfect guy to answer those questions. First hour, well, we've got Jimmy Akin, but this is going to be a really fun hour. We're going to do faith and science. So if you have a faith and science question, this hour is for you. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. You want to know something about how the book of Genesis comports with science, or what's the relationship between science and miracles, or any other faith and science type question, you're welcome to ask them. I have a giant stack here next to me, and this is all Jimmy Akin material. A Daily Defense, Fathers Know Best, Teaching with Authority, The Bible is a Catholic Book. Those are all Jimmy Akin books. And then I've got the latest CD version or CD production from Jimmy Akin, the Mysteries of Fatima. Jimmy is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and also the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Jimmy, thanks for doing this Monday with us.
Hey, my pleasure. Happy to help out.
And faith and science, you like both of those things?
Oh, yeah. Mr. Spock and Thomas Aquinas were my role models, so sure.
Yeah, all right. You sent this to me today, a little notice that there's water on the moon in places they didn't expect to find water on the moon. So let's just start there. If there's going to be science news, let's do it.
Yeah, well, NASA had I monitor science news every day. And a few days ago, NASA announced they had an exciting announcement about the moon Monday today. And I thought, unless there's life there, it's not that exciting. But because we already knew there was water on the moon, what they found that's new is that it appears to be, on the daylight side, not just up around the poles, not just in dark places, but in places that receive sunlight. And it actually gets quite hot on the moon when it's subjected to direct sunlight because of the lack of an atmosphere. The sun's rays just bombard it. And so it can be quite hot there. And that could lead to water not being present. But the good news is it looks like there's even more water than they knew about. And consequently, hopefully we'll be able to exploit that in the future when we have astronauts and moon bases and moon mining and all kinds of stuff like that going on. We're in fact planning on going back to the moon, the United States is, with manned missions in just 4 years as part of the Artemis program.
I'm looking forward to that. It feels like, it's so close, but so far. One thing about space, though, it's very, very harsh to live in a place, say, with no measurable atmosphere. It's hard. Are they going to live underground?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to dig holes and live underground, or what are we going to do?
Maybe, or, build structures on the surface. But there's oxygen there. It's not in readily accessible form, but if they may, of course, they'll bring some initial starter oxygen with them, but then they'll presumably convert oxygen that's, in rocks and or in the water, because all you have to do is, apply electricity to the water and you can get the oxygen out of it. And they'll be able to build up an oxygen atmosphere for a human environment.
888-318-7884. We're talking faith and science with Jimmy Akin this hour. Okay, so let's say we get cities on the moon. And then I'm going to mix faith and science here a little bit. And then the day of the Lord comes and the Lord returns and we're caught up with him in the air. What is going to happen with the people on the moon? They're not even here to meet Jesus when he comes.
Well, it's a question the magisterium has not answered. But if we speculate, I would speculate that all human beings are going to be involved in the final judgment. And so even if we have colonies elsewhere in the solar system or even beyond, that those people will be caught up and experience the final judgment and the eternal order with the rest of us.
Oh, all right. Okay. I'll go then. I wasn't going to go if I could miss out on something, but I'll go now. Actually, I think I'd be a terrible, terrible astronaut. I'd be probably dizzy and sick the whole way. Would you do it? Would you go? Like, say they could, reasonably safe.
Well, if
like airliner safe.
If it's airliner safe, yeah, I'd probably do it. I don't like airline travel, but getting to go to space would be really cool.
Yeah, right. Space is my favorite part of the world. 888-318-7884. Already the call's coming in. Why don't we just go to them? It's Faith and Science. Look, we're having some fun to start off a Monday. You always have these Faith and Science questions. Now you got Jimmy Akin here to answer them. 888-31-TRUTH is the number. Let's start with Andrew. Watching on YouTube in Tampa, Florida. Andrew, thank you so much for your call. Your question for Jimmy.
Thank you. So many people claim that the miracle of Our Lady of Fatima is just natural science with the sun. How can we defend the church's miraculous claim to it?
Okay. So for folks who may not be aware, because we most Catholics will be aware of this, but we have non-Catholic listeners. In 1917, a group of children in Portugal began reporting that the Virgin Mary appeared to them once a month for a number of months, and she predicted that on her final appearance there would be a miracle that everybody would be able to see. And indeed, in October of 1917, at her final appearance, there were thousands of people there, and people claimed to see the sun, among other things, see the sun behave in very unusual ways. It was reported as spinning or dancing in the sky, and this was witnessed even by people who were not people of faith. And so it's taken as supernatural confirmation of the reality of Our Lady of Fatima's appearances. There have been attempts to explain it naturally. Some people would say, well, if you're staring at the sun, you know, it's going to hurt your eyes, and maybe that would cause it. But this seems to have gone beyond what would happen from just staring at the sun. That's not really what people reported. There have been speculations about what could cause this. For example, the priest and physicist Father Stanley Yockey, in his book on the subject, conjectures that there was an atmospheric phenomenon where conditions were right in the atmosphere that it caused the sun's rays to come through the atmosphere in a way they don't normally, and that created this visual effect that people saw. And if you buy Father Yockey's theory, that's perfectly fine. That doesn't mean it's not supernatural, because even if there are natural effects that can produce something, the fact it was supernaturally predicted ahead of time indicates this is still supernatural. It's one thing to say the atmosphere behaves in an unusual way, and that causes the sun's light to come down in an unusual way. But it's another thing to say that's going to happen on October 13th at the final apparition, and lots of people are going to see it. And because that's something that cannot be predicted just by random chance. A person makes a prediction like that, and 99%+ of the time it's not going to come true. And so the fact you had the unusual atmospheric phenomenon, if that's what it was, is the fact it's predicted in advance gives you evidence that this is supernatural. Even so, there's not a problem with God using natural means to accomplish his ends. We even see that in the Bible, like when the Israelites crossed the Red Sea, it says God used a wind to do that. He had a wind blow all night, and it pushed back the waters, and they were able to cross. Then the wind stopped, and the waters came back together. So even in the Bible, we see God using natural causation, or secondary causation, as it's sometimes referred to accomplish his ends. But just like the sun's going to dance on October 13th is something unpredictable in advance by natural reason, so the Red Sea is going to part is something supernatural that's unable to be predicted in advance. And so in both of these cases, you'd still have evidence that we're dealing with something supernatural, even if you say God used natural secondary causation to produce the effect he wanted. On the other hand, you don't have to buy a natural secondary explanation for the for what happened with the sun, because God's omnipotent and the laws of the universe are things he wrote. And consequently, if he wanted to just have the light coming in from the sun distort, even without a natural atmospheric phenomenon to cause that, he could do it. He could just operate directly on the light rays.
How's that? Is that an acceptable answer, Andrew?
That's perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for starting us off. We have a special hour with Jimmy Akin this hour. We're talking faith and science. If you've got a faith, faith and science. I got that right. Okay. If you've got a faith and science question, give us a call, 888-318-7884. Anything about the intersection of faith and science, or you got something, a bit of scientific knowledge, and you say, that doesn't seem to fit with what we believe, or maybe vice versa. Maybe you've got some piece of our faith, and you don't think that it fits with the scientific evidence, or whatever. Any kind of question about faith and science is welcome. 888-318-7884. The store-wide sale continues. The very best deals on great Catholic resources are at shop.catholic.com right now. Hundreds of items discounted 10 to 25% off. As I've said before, some even up to 50% off. And that counts on everything, including, I mentioned the stack of Jimmy Akin stuff. That's not even the beginning of the Jimmy Akin stuff that's available here. You can go to shop.catholic.com, and all of Jimmy's stuff is on sale right now. Plus $5 flat rate shipping if you live within the continental U.S. Visit shop.catholic.com today and check out the deals.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with program info, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. Just go to ewtn.com/wings, fill out your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. When you get yours, send it to all your friends, and they can send it to their friends, and pretty soon we're covering the whole world with the good news about EWTN. Wings, the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on a really great Monday. Second hour, Bishop Robert Barron will be with us to discuss his new book. This hour, Jimmy Akin with us. All those who know Jimmy Akin know he enjoys a good science question. And it's fun to have a full hour where you can ask your faith and science questions of Jimmy Akin. 888-318-7884. Any age, welcome. Old or young, with your faith and science questions. And you, certainly, if you're not a Christian believer and you'd like to ask your question from the perspective of an unbeliever, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Thomas in Phoenix, Arizona is next. Thomas, also watching on YouTube. Hi, Thomas.
Hi.
Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Oh, great. Thank you. Jimmy, first of all, I just want to say, huge fan of your work. I have all your books sitting right next to me on my table.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. So my question, Jimmy, is something that has been really helpful for me has been, in my faith journey, has been seeing all the scientific evidence of all the miracles, right? The Eucharistic miracles, the apparitions, so on and so forth. Now, my question is, I feel like the church hasn't, there isn't really like a single source of truth or an official single source of truth, for all this scientific evidence. And my question is there a specific reason for that? Or is it just that, they just haven't gotten around to it? Because if you look online, there's, conflicting evidence. It's a bit of a mess, to be honest. So my question really is around that.
Well, so when we're talking about evidence connected with miracles in church history, as opposed to biblical miracles, the church, I mean, there's been loads and loads of reports of miracles. I mean, it constantly every year, lots and lots of reports of miracles, and for the most part, and similarly apparitions. For the most part, it's left up to the judgment of the local ordinary, the local bishop, to investigate those. And so there's a kind of decentralized structure in terms of how the church processes those claims. Now, in some situations, the whether or not a miracle happened becomes relevant to the cause of canonization for someone who is being considered for sainthood. You know, the church wants to answer the question, did a miracle happen through the intercession of this person, which would then give us evidence that the person is in heaven and thus might be declared a saint. And that actually there is a central processing place for that kind of case. And it's the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. So the Congregation for the Causes of Saints will investigate reports of miracles that are performed through the intercession of someone who has a cause for canonization open. And they do it in an interesting way. They have a separate scientific team and theological team looking at the miracle. And the scientific team gets the first say, and they don't care what your faith position is. If you're a scientist, they don't even ask what your religion is. They just they approach you and ask for your scientific opinion on, is this explainable or not? Most of these cases are medical. And so I know about a Canadian doctor who is a pathologist that was approached with some before and after results of photographs of someone, you know, what had happened, I think, in someone's bone marrow. And she thought, she did not know she was being approached by the Vatican. They wanted her unbiased opinion. They didn't even tell her they were with the Vatican. She thought this was going to be a court case, that, you know, someone was suing somebody over medical malpractice. And she looked at the slides and said, no, there's no way to explain that scientifically. Then she finds out this was a cause for canonization miracle investigation. And she herself was an atheist. So, you know, they really are looking for an objective scientific opinion. Is this explainable or not in terms of what we know about science? Then if it passes that stage, it gets looked at by the theological experts to say, okay, we have evidence that something supernatural here happened here. Is it likely to be of God or not? And so you do have a kind of miracle investigation team operated under the auspices of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. And if you're a scholar, you can access those archives. In fact, the doctor who I mentioned later did access the archive. She went over to Rome. She got interested in how the church investigates miracles. She went over to Rome. She got access to the archives of the congregation, and she later wrote a book about medical miracles and how they relate to saints, and other miracles and how they relate to saints. And it's a fascinating read. But they don't just, at least these, they have not yet thrown all that open to the public. And so you kind of need to be a scholar in order to access this material. In terms of, could the church one day have some kind of public database of all this stuff? It could, but thus far it hasn't. And, you know, the Holy See's website hasn't even gotten everything it needs to get online yet available online. So it may be a while before we have something as interesting as a central clearinghouse for miracle investigations, but it's possible.
Okay, Thomas.
Yeah, thank you. Really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I've sometimes thought with the, how shall I say this? Sometimes I feel like there are shortcomings in the secular media. Like when mm-hmm. I see a newspaper report, you know, the Vatican claims a miracle for this or that, you know, saint cause or something, I sometimes wish, why don't they investigate that? Why don't they get a little curious? But they don't. I don't,
Because the media is not about investigating stuff anymore. That's the old days. Oh. The media today is about rewriting press releases and spinning things politically. And getting clicks.
I didn't know you were going to answer that question, but okay, I totally buy your answer, and I'm old. I want to give you a question from YouTube from Aaron, only because I want to make sure that we get some folks who are not our fellow Christian believers to get their questions in here. And if you're anybody can call 888-318-7884. But Aaron on YouTube asked a couple questions, but I just selected one. If Christianity, if Catholic Christians believe in science, why deny the age of the earth?
Well, the Catholic Church doesn't deny the age of the earth. In fact, the Catholic Church does not have an official position on what the age of the earth is. If you look at the Catechism of the Catholic Church, for example, it understands the days of creation as a symbolic representation of the work of the Creator. It doesn't take them literally. And in another passage in the Catechism, it says that many scientific studies have splendidly enriched our knowledge of the age and dimensions of the Earth and the cosmos and the development of life forms. And they're thinking there of mainstream scientific studies. So there's no problem at all from a Catholic perspective if you want to say the Church is old. Now, because that's a matter of science, it's not a matter of church teaching. You know, the Bible doesn't say the earth is billions of years old, so it's up to scientists to provide evidence for that. But the Catholic Church respects the scientific studies that have been done that have concluded that. In fact, as far back as 1950, Pope Pius XII gave some speeches in which he highlighted evidence that scientists had been discovering that the earth and the cosmos were billions of years old. He had absolutely no problem with that. In fact, the father of the Big Bang Theory, Father George Lemaître, who is a Belgian priest, actually had to counsel Pius XII on, you know, all this science stuff is provisional, so don't oversell this. But the Pope was very supportive of that, and subsequent popes have been as well. By the way, I recently did a just to give Aaron an illustration of a Catholic person of faith who's interested in science interacting with this question. On my podcast, Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, I recently did a three-part series. It's episodes 119, 120, and 121 on the age of the earth. And we cover both the biblical and the scientific evidence related to this question. And so I'd suggest you check that out if you'd like more. It's right there on YouTube where you're listening.
I hope you'll enjoy that, Aaron. And thanks for your question. Thanks very much. Questions are welcome here on Faith and Science this hour, 888-318-7884. I'm going to go back to you callers, but I want to just ask this, Jimmy, because I meant to ask you this at the beginning, because I wanted to clear something up. There's a tendency, I think, to talk about faith and science and talk past one another because it's hard to have a clear definition of what science is for one thing, but also what are we talking about when we're talking about faith? Like, I think sometimes the science-minded person thinks faith means blind belief, in something. I just took a leap of faith and for no reason I believe that. And then the faith, well, I mean, we all misunderstand science, frankly. I think even science writers sometimes, they use science as a word without coordinating it to a clear reality. So maybe help me out with what are we talking about when we're talking specifically about science, but also what is faith?
Okay, so faith is, there are different ways of approaching it, but one way to approach it, and if I run out of time, we can talk more about this on the other side of the break, but one way to understand faith is it's believing that God has revealed certain things to us and, you know, believing them because God has revealed them. Well, you don't have to believe something just because someone tells you God said it. It's reasonable to have evidence that God actually said it. And in fact, in the Bible, there are tests where if a prophet comes to you and says, "Thus saith the Lord," there are tests you can use to figure out, is that accurate or not? And some of them involve miracles. You know, if a prophet says, "Oh, a miracle is going to happen next Tuesday," and it doesn't, well, guess what? That's evidence that this guy isn't really in communication with God. On the other hand, if he says a miracle is going to happen next Tuesday and this is exactly what's going to happen and it does, like the Son of Man will be raised on the third day, yeah. Well, then that's evidence that prophet is in communication with a superhuman source that has knowledge that other that normal humans don't have. And so it gives you reason to trust his messages. So faith does involve the use of evidence, but it involves being willing to accept things that are taught on the basis of good evidence without that go beyond what you can simply verify for yourself. And this is something that, for example, the writer C.S. Lewis talked about, how, you know, almost everything we individually believe is something we have not proven for ourselves. We accept information from other human beings, and if we have reason to think they're credible, we believe that information. This is just the same principle being applied to God.
Okay, so I'll ask you about science when we come back, and then we'll go back to calls. Okay. The number 888-318-7884. Jimmy Akin, our guest. Faith and science, our topic. Your calls, welcome.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Jimmy Akin is our guest this hour. Jimmy, of course, the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. He is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers. And Jimmy, sometimes the internet gets a little bit flip, and somebody says to somebody else, well, why would you believe that? And the other person says, because science, and then they put an exclamation point after it. And I feel like science is almost like a magic invocation there that... So what are we talking about when we're talking about science? I feel like sometimes it's we use it as this tool for kind of beating each other over the head, but we don't actually have a good definition of what we're talking about.
Well, it's actually a question that is of interest to philosophers of science, and there's not a single agreed upon answer about what science actually is. There have been proposals to define science in terms of a specific method, yeah, that's often called the scientific method, where basically you observe what's going on in the world, then you formulate a hypothesis that would explain what you see and enable you to make a testable prediction, and then you do the test. And if your prediction is right, then that's evidence that supports the hypothesis you proposed. But if the test fails, that's evidence against your hypothesis. And even though that's how scientific method is often described, philosophers of science have pointed out, well, actually there are situations where that's not really what scientists do. And so one way of, and I think this is probably the best simple way to explain it, is science is a collection of techniques that have been developed over the last few centuries that enable us to investigate and explain things that are going on in the world around us. And originally, they weren't distinct fields of study. The sciences weren't. Originally, it was all just philosophy. What we now call natural science used to be called natural philosophy or philosophy of nature. And it, the study of it goes, you know, way, way far back in human history. I mean, Aristotle had whole books on different aspects of what today we would consider science. But back then, they were considered philosophy. And over the centuries, it was so-called natural philosophers who studied nature and laid the foundations of modern science and started developing the techniques that eventually became part of science. But actually, the label science, scientist, is very new. It only was coined in 1834. And it wasn't until later in the 1800s that you had people who would say professionally, I'm a scientist. That's what I do for my job. Before that, they were all just natural philosophers. But as more techniques got developed and as more knowledge about the natural world was cultivated, it got to the point that you could specialize in one branch of this or another. And so science started to drift away from philosophy and it started to spread out like the branches of a tree. And so you have today chemistry and physics and biology and all these different branches of scientific study that an individual can specialize in.
All right, a whole bunch of calls for you, Jimmy. Faith and science, our topic this hour. Jimmy Akin, our guest. Let's go to Bismarck, North Dakota. Dave, listening on 91.7 FM Real Presence Radio. Your question, please, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. See, earlier this year, I heard a speaker talking about the Shroud of Turin, and he was saying that the image on the shroud was caused by like an energy level, energy blast that was similar to the atomic bomb, you know, that was dropped during World War II. And I was just wondering if that was true, or if you had any more information on that.
I'm aware of this claim. It's the idea is that the image on the Shroud of Turin is not a pigment, so it's not a painting. Instead, according to this, it's, if I understand the claim correctly, it's a scorch mark. And in order to produce this kind of scorch mark, you would need a high energy event that that I would suppose released electromagnetic radiation in the gamma wave part of the spectrum. I've heard this claim. I have not personally dug into all of the claims regarding the shroud in depth yet, though I plan to in the future.
Okay.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate that call.
Yeah. Also, I should point out, atom bombs are big destructive things that release lots of energy in an uncontrolled way, but that's not what happened in order to create the image on the shroud. There wasn't an atom bomb that did that. Whatever created the image on the shroud was a very controlled thing. And so just because this gets compared to something an atom bomb would do, don't think atom bomb level explosive.
Again, thank you, Dave. Thanks very much. Let's go to Travis in Dallas, New Mexico, listening on 96.7 FM. Travis, your question for Jimmy Akin. Travis?
Travis?
No?
No.
All right. Let me try. Well, hang on. We'll come back to Travis. Let's go to Noah in Westmont, Illinois, watching on YouTube. Noah, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hi, thanks for having me on. So this is a somewhat scientific question. It's more relating to Mary. It kind of has to do with science, though. So my question is, why couldn't the Holy Spirit have just purified Mary's egg inside of her womb instead of having to purify Mary as a person in the Immaculate Conception?
Ah.
I get that. I get that. like the Immaculate Conception is supposed to be about, you know, Mary has to have been spared of original sin, otherwise she couldn't have been the bearer of Jesus.
Right. This is a question that comes up periodically. It is more of a theological question than a scientific one, but the Immaculate Conception is the belief that God purified Mary at her conception, not when she became pregnant with Jesus, but that he purified her at her conception to protect her from original sin and its consequences, and thus make her a fitting mother for Jesus. And you will sometimes hear people claim that God had to do it this way, but that's not true, and that's not the church's teaching. The church only teaches that it was fitting for Jesus to have a mother who was pure, but God could have done it any way he wanted. He could have taken a prostitute and have his son become incarnate as the result of a prostitute if he wanted, as a way of showing the triumph of God's grace and holiness over sin, if he chose to do that. But it was fitting that Christ have a mother who was pure, and so God intervened and made Mary pure from the first moment of her existence, but it didn't have to be that way. God is omniscient and can do what he wants.
All right. I hope that was helpful to you. Thank you so
much. I'm omnipotent as well as omniscient.
Let's try Steve in – no, I'm sorry. I was Joan in Bismarck, North Dakota. Steve, hang on. We're going to get to you. Joan in Bismarck, North Dakota, listening on 91.7 FM Real Presence Radio. Joan, your question for Jimmy.
Hi. So I recently had a sort of argument with my brother, who is a biologist.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And we were discussing Eucharistic miracles, and his argument was that they couldn't be considered any sort of empirical evidence because there wasn't any proof of the chain of custody of the different hosts, and there wasn't any measure of the hosts before and after the transubstantiation. So I'm just wondering if there are any Eucharistic miracles like that where there is some sort of chain of custody that's been proven.
So this is your brother makes a valid point in terms of scientific evidence and providing conclusive proof, because if you want to cite a given object as having undergone a miraculous transformation, you do need to know the chain of custody. You need to know the provenance of the object, and you need to be able to ensure that there wasn't some kind of switch that happened at some point along the line. And you need to be able to exclude that if you're going to offer it as scientific proof. So I would agree that, and I'm not aware of any cases that have rigorously documented chains of custody. There may be some, I'm just not aware of them. But even if they're not, well, okay, so we would say we don't have conclusive scientific proof here, but that doesn't mean these don't provide evidence. And that, you know, you can still have evidence even if you don't have conclusive proof. And so I would sort of, I guess, take a middle position and acknowledge your brother's point that it's not conclusive, but on the other hand say, well, that doesn't mean it can just be dismissed and it has no evidential value either.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Joan, just a quick note for you. Our friend, Dr. Stacey Trisankos, did some, she's a chemist, and she did some research into some Eucharistic miracles. You might look at just look for Dr. Stacey Trisankos, her website, and I think she has some of the material there. So she looked at the science reports around some, and it might be of interest to your brother because he's a biologist, and she'd be happy to help you with that as well.
Again, the chain of custody is going to be important, because even if you look at the object after its supposed miraculous transformation,
yeah,
and you say, yeah, that's not a wheat host anymore, well, you still need to know, well, what happened along all the different stages.
Exactly. Okay. Thanks, Joan. Really appreciate the question. Wow. Now the lines are alight. We'll do our very best to get to everybody's question when we come back with Jimmy Akin. This hour, the topic, faith and science. More right after this.
Call us now with your question. Hello? On Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Are you prepared to vote?
Citizens have co-responsibility for society. This duty especially obliges those in a democracy who must elect representatives to run the state on their behalf.
Learn more so you're prepared when you vote this November. Visit EWTN.com/vote for everything Catholic voters need to know before picking up a ballot.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Very exciting Monday show. Jimmy Akin with us this hour. We're talking faith and science. Well, you get to ask Jimmy anything you want about faith and science. Second hour, Bishop Robert Barron, who you know from everywhere, to talk about his new book, Renewing Our Hope, Essays for the New Evangelization. Let's go to Gastonia, North Carolina, listening on EWTN Radio. Up next is Stephen. Stephen, of course, right when I go to the line, drops. So, we got another Stephen, and I don't know where he's from, but I'm going to go to line one real quick. Maybe it's the same Stephen, maybe just on a different line. Stephen, you there with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. You got a question for Jimmy Akin?
Yes, sir. Jimmy, I'm a really big fan of your show, and my question to you is, how do we balance looking at, say, miracles from the Bible in balancing the faith and reason perspective of trying not, like, seeing things logically, but also not trying to take a naturalistic kind of look at miracles and acknowledge them for what they actually are? Does that question make sense to you, sir?
Well, let me take a stab at it, and you tell me if I've answered, okay?
All right.
So in the Bible, we have to, we have reports of things, the Bible is written in human language, and as a result of that, we have to seek to understand precisely what it's claiming. In some cases, it says things that are very ordinary, that are very quotidian or, you know, unsurprising, like King so-and-so went into battle and defeated his enemy. Well, that happens all the time in the world. So that's something that, you know, doesn't raise too much of a question about how to interpret it. It's fairly straightforward in most cases when you encounter that kind of claim in the Bible. But then you encounter other kinds of language that would be very extraordinary. Like, in the prophets, it'll say, and the trees all clap their hands. Well, trees don't have hands and they don't clap them. So is this a miracle where God is miraculously enabling trees to have hands and clap them? Or is it something else, like a literary expression? Well, most scholars have no problem looking at that kind of statement and saying, okay, this is not a miracle claim. This is a literary expression. It's figurative. On the other hand, you have other extraordinary claims like the Son of Man rose from the dead. Okay, you read it in context and it's clear that's not a literary expression. That's a miracle. Now, there are fringe cases where it's hard to decide between which one of these categories we should put a statement in. And that's understandable, but scholars just need to understand the literature better to try to figure out how do the rules that apply to this literature work, and that will enable us to better sort the different claims and analyze them and figure out, okay, exactly what's being said here and what's not being said here. So, you know, there are obvious cases, but there are also fringe cases where it's a little hard to distinguish. Kind of like, you know, if you're looking at a color spectrum, there's an obvious difference between red and orange. But if you try to say, where exactly is the line between red and orange, it's not so clear. And similarly, in complex works of literature, it can be a little difficult to categorize everything, but it's something that's possible in principle. And if we're open to the evidence of reason in studying what, you know, how ancient literature worked, that can inform us. And if we're open also to the supernatural, so that we don't have to dismiss everything as, oh, that must be, you know, erroneous, or that must be a figurative statement. That also will help us. So both faith and reason have a role in trying to figure out how to take various biblical passages and various reports of things that look like miracles in the Bible. Does that help?
Oh, man, that was awesome, Jimmy. Again, I love your show. Look forward to listening to it every week. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. By the since you brought it up, Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, what's out on Friday? Jimmy, what's the new one going to be?
Oh, well, this is a fifth Friday, so it's a weird question show.
Oh, good.
We're going to be talking about our transporters, murder machines, among other things.
I tend to think they might be murder machines. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Kansas. JD's okay. In Kansas, listening on 97.3 FM. JD in Kansas, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Yep. Okay. Thanks for taking my call. I am a farmer, and it's going to sound like a weird question, but sometimes cows, namely young female cows or heifers, they will get bred unfavorably. They weren't supposed to be bred. Maybe the neighbor's bull got in the pasture. Well, there is a drug you can give them that is called a luteinizing hormone, and it will abort them if they are pregnant. And I got to thinking about that the other day, and I was just curious, is that morally acceptable to do that? I've never done it before, but people do it. So I didn't know. I didn't know if that was morally acceptable or not, because they are animals, they're not humans, and I just curious.
Okay.
Right. So being a farmer, you have cows, and I appreciate that. My family also had a cattle ranch, which my grandmother maintained alone until she was 83 years old when she finally sold the cows. And every summer, we would drive down to Texas, and there would be a cow that would be butchered, and we would have meat for the next year. So, JD, is it okay with you if someone butchers one of your cows? I mean, with your consent.
Sure.
Yeah. So this is essentially the same thing, just at an earlier stage of the cow's development. God has not given humans the right to take human life, but he has given animal life and plant life into our hands so that they can serve human needs. And so if you need meat, you can butcher a cow. If you need wheat, you can harvest your wheat. If you need to terminate a pregnancy in a cow so that it doesn't cause problems, well, that's serving a human need. And so it would be legitimate in principle to do that. Now, I'm not being an expert in this area, I don't know like exactly why one would do that. You said bred unfavorably. I assume that means there are negative consequences to her bearing this cow.
Go ahead, JD.
Typically the calf would be, like, say the calf was born in the spring, and then the bulls are in with the cows and the calves in the summer. The heifer calf may have matured a little faster than the other ones, and the bull got her bred before we got the bull out. So say she got bred when she was 400 pounds. She's probably only going to weigh about 600 or 700 pounds when she has the calf, and will most likely lose her, the calf, or both. Why so someone that, would do that.
Yeah, you don't want to have a calf under 600 pounds.
No. So it poses a danger to the life of the calf or the cow or both. And that would be a reason to go ahead and terminate the calf in this case. And that's okay because the calf is not a human being.
I got to know, how big does she have to be to safely calve? I don't know how big a cow has to.
Preferably, like on a heifer, 800 to 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Where their body frame's big enough, where they typically won't have a lot of trouble.
Yeah, so about a VW bug. She's got to weigh about as much as a VW bug. Okay, JD, thanks. You're satisfied with the answer?
Yes, sir.
I don't want to be around any 1,000-pound bugs. That's scary.
No, that is scary, yes. Thank God for JD and all the farmers. Thank you all. I love the food. Yeah. I really appreciate it. I love the food.
Especially the tasty animals.
They are some delicious animals. Although I have to say, I have to thank the fishermen for some of my favorite animals to eat. But I'm very grateful to the farmers as well.
Like they say, if God didn't want us to eat animals, he wouldn't have made them out of meat.
Exactly. That was a foolish move on his part if he wanted us to stay away from him. I just love talking to farmers too. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. Like he knows how much that it is, isn't it? And he says, yeah, it is.
There are sciences here. Agronomy, animal husbandry, that's part of science.
All right. So let me ask you a faith and science question, Jimmy. This is more of an opinion question, but it seems to me like a few years ago, maybe around the turn of the century, there was this intense assault on the idea that faith and science could coexist at all. I feel like people have calmed down on that a little bit. And do you feel like that? Like it's calmed down a little bit?
I think so. The part of it is the new atheists, the four horsemen of the new atheism, have sort of passed from the scene. They've had their fad day, and they were ones that were really stirring that idea up. And I also just think there's been a shift in how people understand this. There are a lot of courses, for example, a lot of books that deal with the history of science that point out, hey, these things have never been irreconcilable. In fact, the Teaching Company has a couple courses on the history of science from antiquity to 1900. And I've listened to them both. They're both outstanding, and they both make the point of just how much faith and science have been intertwined all the way down through history, and how people of faith don't dismiss science. And it's been them, because the people in the past have been very religious, it's been them who were driving the scientific enterprise forward. And in a Christian context is a way of understanding God's creation and his work and his glory. So in the Middle Ages, for example, you had scholar, scientist, theologians like St. Albert the Great, who were exploring scientific questions as a way of trying to understand and appreciate God's creation and also his own glory.
And it's also just a historical fact that science as an academic discipline, it never could have happened without the Christian contributions. I'm thinking particularly of the creation of the medieval hospitals and universities, where all this science picked up steam over time.
Mm-hmm. And then the scientific revolution didn't launch until, say, the 1500s. And that was in a firmly Christian age. And the key scientists that drove it forward were Christians. Isaac Newton being a great example. I mean, he's considered the most important scientist in history, even more than Einstein. Yes, really.
Yeah.
And Isaac Newton was intensely interested in theology. He also was a heretic, but he kept that on the down low. But he was a person of faith and also considered the greatest scientist in history.
Jimmy Akin is our guest. You can find his writings at jimmyakin.com. You can find him at our website, catholic.com. And he's got a whole bunch of books over at shop.catholic.com. If you want to have some nice short snippets, I always recommend A Daily Defense. It's a fun one you can work your way through. The latest one is The Bible is a Catholic Book. Jimmy, it'll be weird questions on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World.
Friday.
Nothing about cows. You know, he said that's a weird question, but I don't even think you would have taken that as a weird question. That's
no.
That's a perfectly normal. Weird questions are things about ghosts, about spaceships, aliens. I can't think of what else, but all that will be on Jimmy.
I'm happy to answer non-weird ones too.
Yeah, that was a good one. Thanks, Jimmy.
My pleasure.
See you later in the week. Up next, Bishop Robert Barron. You know Bishop Robert Barron. He made the Catholicism series, and since then he's been probably about the most famous Catholic in America. He's got a brand new book, Renewing Our Hope, Essays for the New Evangelization. We'll talk with him about it next on Catholic Answers Live.